hits. Forget.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Novak.
There is a growing movement to make Bitcoin a reserve digital currency. One cryptocurrency platform is hoping to own $10 billion worth of Bitcoin to back its own stablecoin. Stablecoins are a growing group of cryptocurrencies that aim to lessen price changes and are usually backed by U.S. dollar reserves. The platform is called Terraform Labs. It is based in Seoul, South Korea. So far, it has built up nearly 40,000 Bitcoin worth $1.7 billion in a series of purchases through a nonprofit called Luna Foundation Guard. Do Kwon is Terraform's co-founder. Last month, he announced on Twitter that the company would buy $10 billion worth of Bitcoin reserves to back Terra USD. These purchases, and the possibility of more to come, are helping raise the price of Bitcoin, now worth $48,000. It is unclear, however, if others will follow Terraform's lead. Buying $10 billion worth can move the price in the short term, said Sid Powell, CEO of Sydney-based crypto lender Maple Finance. But over the longer period, it's more what it signals, that Bitcoin has been introduced as the hottest form of collateral backing for currencies. Yet other market experts said that a closer relationship between Bitcoin and stablecoins like Terra USD could introduce a new risk for crypto markets. There is a danger some people are trying to position long ahead of the buying, which could exaggerate a fall if the price starts to decrease, said Richard Usher. He is with the crypto company BCB Group in London. Stablecoins are quickly gaining popularity. They are a common form of exchange. They are often used by traders seeking to move funds around and predict the value of other cryptocurrencies. For example, it is much easier to spend Tether, the biggest stablecoin, for Bitcoin or other crypto, than it is to spend US dollars for Bitcoin. Terra USD is now the fourth largest stablecoin. Like other stablecoins, it is attached to the dollar. The Bitcoin reserves add another level of security while keeping the Terra project decentralized. Matthew Siegel is a market researcher. He said he expected other stablecoins to follow Terra's lead and back up their coins with reserves of Bitcoin. They could even back it with other cryptocurrencies if the experiment succeeds. I'm Dan Novak.
In many Asian countries, street food has long been an important part of society and the economy. The offerings are tasty and do not cost very much. But the COVID-19 pandemic and now the war in Ukraine are putting pressure on the food traditions. In Beijing, China, profits at Ma Hong's hot pot restaurant have been cut by about 20% since it opened last year. The prices of beef have shot up by more than 50%. The costs of other important food products are rising, too. Ma said, "We sell it at the same price as before. Also, with the impact of the pandemic, everybody is hanging in there. It is the same all over Beijing. We are not the only restaurant suffering." Asian restaurants and street food sellers are facing a difficult choice. They can keep the same price and lose money, or raise the cost of food and lose customers. The prices of goods that were limited in supply during the pandemic are now even higher because of Russia's war in Ukraine. Mohammed Ilyas is a cook at a biryani shop in Karachi, Pakistan. He said the price of a kilogram of biryani, a seasoned rice dish, has doubled in price. It now costs about 400 Pakistani rupees, or $2.20. "I have been working at this kitchen for the last 15 years," he said. "These days, prices of rice and spices have gone up so much that poor people can't afford to eat." Some businesses are dealing with the cost pressures by giving customers smaller food servings. At a street food corner in Jakarta, Indonesia, Syarul Zainullah has cut his servings of an Indonesian fried rice dish. He chose to do this instead of raise prices or use lower quality ingredients. In South Korea, inflation is at a 12-year high. Choi Soon-hwa, a kimchi shop owner, explained that the cost of cabbage has risen greatly. Kimchi is traditionally served for free alongside meals at Korean eateries. But even kimchi has become a costly food product. Choi said she will not be able to continue to operate her shop if she cannot raise her prices. Seo Jae-yoon, a customer at Choi's shop, said kimchi should now be called kyumchi. Kyum means gold in Korean. "I can't ask restaurants to give more kimchi these days," she said, "and it's too expensive to make my own at home."
The American Space Agency, NASA, is experimenting with ways to build huge telescopes with fluid materials. Such devices could permit astronomers to examine older and more distant space objects. Bigger telescopes often lead to big, new discoveries. They can reach deeper into space, finding and collecting light at far greater distances than smaller equipment. In January, NASA announced the deployment of its largest and most powerful telescope ever built, the James Webb Space Telescope. It aims to build on the work of past telescopes while gathering in-depth information on the early development of the universe.
But NASA is seeking to greatly expand the size of its telescopes, up to 100 times over ones currently in use. One way to do this is to build lenses using fluid materials. NASA has been carrying out experiments to see if fluids can be used to create telescope lenses in microgravity conditions. The goal is to establish a method that could be used by astronauts in space to create lenses after transporting the necessary materials. Much of the research centers on exploring how liquids behave in microgravity. NASA notes in a description of its experiments that all liquids contain a force that holds them together at their surface. This force is called surface tension. On Earth, surface tension can keep very small drops of water together in a perfect circle. But when the drops get bigger, the surface tension is broken, and the drop's circular shape collapses. In space, the microgravity environment causes drops of water and other fluids to form perfect circles and stay that way.
One experiment is called the Fluidic Telescope Experiment, or FLUET. It is a joint project involving NASA's Ames Research Center in California, the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland, and the Israel Institute of Technology, known as Technion. FLUET's main investigator is Edward Balaban. He said in a statement, "The way liquids behave in microgravity can be a good fit for producing large telescopes or other optical elements. In microgravity, liquids take on shapes that are useful for making lenses and mirrors," Balaban said. "So if we make them in space, they could be used to build telescopes that are dramatically bigger than was previously thought possible."
FLUET team members have carried out experiments on the ground and in the air to test different liquid materials. In one test, scientists combined water with chemical mixes in search of a good material to make telescope lenses. The tests simulated a weightless environment. Researchers involved in the experiments said they were able to easily create lenses in a container. They reported that the resulting lenses had surface qualities similar to, or even better than, lenses produced with costly equipment.
In December, the FLUET team carried out experiments on 2 zero-gravity airplane flights. Such flights involve an airplane climbing and falling at different altitudes in an effort to produce brief microgravity conditions. The team had 50 chances to reach 15 to 20 second periods of microgravity for testing. Moran Berkovici, a professor of mechanical engineering at Technion, helped lead the experiments. He said the team used pumps to push different oil materials into a circular frame. In a few seconds, Berkovici said, "We were able to create a freestanding liquid lens. Until the plane lifted upwards again and gravity kicked in and the oils oozed out." The experiment produced hardened lenses. Berkovici and his team plan to complete more experiments in the coming months to test how different fluids keep their shape in microgravity.
One FLUET project experiment will be carried out aboard the International Space Station. It is to be completed by private astronaut Eitan Stibbe, the second Israeli to go to space. He launched to the ISS on April 8th. Along with 3 other private astronauts. Stibbe will attempt to use polymer material, like in the Technion laboratory experiment, to create lenses in full microgravity. The lenses will then be transported back to Earth for close examination. Balaban said, "If our ISS experiment is successful, It will be the first time an optical component is made in space. It feels a bit like making history. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we continue the story of the 37th President of the United States, Richard Nixon. The year is 1969. Richard Nixon, a Republican, is in the first year of his first term in office. His biggest foreign policy problem is the continuing war in Vietnam. During the election campaign, Nixon had promised to do something to end the war. The question was, what? Some Americans want him to withdraw troops from Vietnam immediately. Bring the soldiers home, they say. Others believe the United States should take whatever measures are necessary to win. Expand the ground war, they say, or even use nuclear weapons. Withdrawing troops would leave South Vietnam alone to resist communist North Vietnam. Yet, that was the reason the United States had entered the conflict, to prevent the communists from capturing the South. Expanding the war would not be an easy decision either. Already, by 1969, more Americans had died in Vietnam than had died during the Korean War. For Richard Nixon, the war is a terrible test. If he fails, his presidency could end the way Lyndon Johnson's presidency ended. Johnson decided not to run for re-election after he lost public and political support for his war policies. Presidents have advisors, and Nixon's most important advisor was Henry Kissinger. Kissinger was an expert on foreign relations. He later served as Nixon's Secretary of State. Together, they tried many ways to settle the conflict in Vietnam. It took several years before the involvement of the United States would finally end. The American efforts were both diplomatic and military. Peace talks were taking place in Paris. But the Nixon administration started secret peace talks in Paris at the same time. The administration also withdrew some troops from Vietnam. Yet, secretly, it sent other troops into Cambodia, and it began bombing neighboring Laos. The Nixon administration also started bombing North Vietnam again. Lyndon Johnson had stopped the raids a few years earlier. Efforts to end American involvement in Vietnam did not begin immediately. For his first 8 months in office, President Nixon made no major policy changes. Then, in October 1969, he ordered the withdrawal of 60,000 troops. He said he acted to speed the peace talks. He also ordered American commanders to give the South Vietnamese most of the responsibility for fighting. Americans were happy that fewer troops would be involved, but many were unhappy that the withdrawal was not complete. Huge anti-war demonstrations took place in the United States in the autumn of 1969. On November 15th, several hundred thousand people protested in Washington. Nixon tried to explain to the American people why he was not ordering an immediate withdrawal. In his words, it is not the easy way, it is the right way. In the spring of 1970, American and South Vietnamese troops invaded Cambodia.
Tonight, American and South Vietnamese units will attack the headquarters for the entire communist military operation in South Vietnam.
Nixon described to the American public why he had decided to order the actions in Cambodia.
This key control center has been occupied by the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong for 5 years in blatant violation of Cambodia's neutrality. This is not an invasion of Cambodia. The areas in which these attacks will be launched are completely occupied and controlled by North Vietnamese forces. Once enemy forces are driven out of these sanctuaries and once their military supplies are destroyed, we will withdraw.
Early in 1971, the Nixon administration decided to provide air and artillery support for a South Vietnamese invasion of Laos. The goal was to stop supplies from reaching North Vietnam through that neighboring country. South Vietnamese forces destroyed many enemy weapons, but they also suffered heavy losses, and many American planes were shot down. After 6 weeks, the South Vietnamese were forced to withdraw. Many members of the United States Congress were angry. They said the invasion of Laos was another in a long series of failures. Nixon's administration had said the United States was winning the war. Opposition Democrats in Congress said the administration was lying. Criticism by the American public grew louder as well. Demonstrations took place across the country, including on college campuses. On May 4, 1970, National Guard troops shot and killed 4 students during protests at Kent State University in Ohio. This is what Neil Young means when he sings of 4 dead in Ohio in a famous protest song that he wrote in reaction to the killings. President Nixon said again that the United States must not permit North Vietnam to take over South Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson had said the same thing when he was president. Many Americans had accepted the war, but as it continued and as more Americans died in Vietnam, public opinion changed. In 1965, 61% of those questioned said they approved of the war. By 1971, 61% said they did not approve of it. The official peace talks in Paris offered little hope of a negotiated settlement. Over a period of several years, each side made proposals only to have the other side reject them. President Nixon wanted to address the public's anger over the war, so he announced that Henry Kissinger had held 12 secret meetings with North Vietnamese officials. But those secret meetings made no more progress than the official talks. In late March 1972, North Vietnam launched a major offensive. In May, Nixon ordered increased bombing against roads and railways in the north. By the end of August, the communist offensive had been stopped. Yet many lives had been lost. The pressure to withdraw American forces grew stronger. For the next 5 months, the Nixon administration continued a policy of official talks, secret meetings, and increased military action. Finally, the president announced that an agreement had been reached at the peace talks in Paris. There would be a ceasefire, and negotiators from the United States, South Vietnam, North Vietnam, and the Viet Cong would sign the agreement. Under the terms of the agreement, all American and Allied forces would withdraw from South Vietnam. The North and South would be free to settle their conflict without interference from other countries. President Nixon announced the news from the White House.
At 12:30 Paris time today, January 23, 1973, the agreement on ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam was initialed by Dr. Henry Kissinger on behalf of the United States and Special Advisor Lee Duc Tho on behalf of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. The agreement will be formally signed by the parties participating in the Paris Conference on Vietnam on January 27, 1973 at the International Conference Center in Paris. The United States and the Democratic Republic of Vietnam express the hope that this agreement will ensure stable peace in Vietnam and contribute to the preservation of lasting peace in Indochina and Southeast Asia.
Yet the fighting continued and would continue even after Nixon resigned from office in 1974. April 30th, 1975, marked the fall of Saigon, the South Vietnamese capital, after the withdrawal of American troops. The North Vietnamese had planned a 2-year campaign to take Saigon. It would take them just 55 days. Another foreign policy issue for the Nixon administration was China. Here was Nixon's chance to shine as a statesman. Communists took power in China in 1949. The United States, however, did not recognize the Communist Party government on the mainland. Instead, it recognized the nationalist Chinese government in Taiwan. In the early 1970s, the Nixon administration began trying to improve relations. It eased restrictions on travel to China, and it supported a visit to China by the United States table tennis team, so-called ping-pong diplomacy. Then President Nixon made a surprise announcement. He himself would visit China. The historic event took place in February 1972. Chinese Premier Zhou Enlai and Party Chairman Mao Zedong greeted the American president. Nixon and Zhou Enlai held talks that opened new possibilities for trade. The next year, Nixon sent a representative to open a diplomatic office in Beijing. After more than 20 years, the two countries were communicating again. They would not establish full relations, however, until 1979, when the United States stopped recognizing Taiwan. Many Americans were happy at the easing of tensions with China, even as the Cold War with the Soviet Union continued. Many were proud to see their president standing at the Great Wall of China. Historians would later call it the greatest moment in the presidency of Richard Nixon. In fact, Nixon might have been remembered as one of America's greatest presidents if not for a break-in at Democratic Party headquarters. It led to a history-changing series of events that came to be known as Watergate.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.